We live at a time when people are becoming more isolated. While we often think we're connected, in reality, we're losing real connectivity with one another. Even prior to the COVID lockdown, people, quite routinely would drive to work alone in their car. They work all day in their office or in their cubicle. They got cash from the ATM. It was just easier to swing through the ATM and pick up some cash rather than going into the branch and talking to a teller and waiting in a line. We would pick up lunch at a drive-through. Just again, it's convenient, it's easy. People would spend evenings at home watching TV, everybody in their own room because everybody's got something different they want to watch for the evening. And rather than try to wrestle, we know the man gets the remote, right? Is that settled? Is that settled yet or not? But no, rather than trying to debate what to watch, people would just kind of go to their own place and watch whatever they wanted. People didn't get together to visit much. They could either talk in a cell phone, they could text, some of this great technology that we have. Again, we're connected in one sense, but not in a real physical bonding sense. So again, the connections we have might be more frequent, but they may often be shorter and quicker, a text. Always a marvel. I'm still one of the guys that I tend to type when I text instead of speaking to my phone. And so I always wonder how people can get back to me so quick with a long text, because I'm over there just pecking away at it, and they're talking their answers back, but so be it. But we tend to have shorter and less meaningful or deeper conversations because it's so convenient. Just pull out the phone, do a quick text. The government mandated lockdowns that were said to be necessary to combat COVID have only really made matters worse in that regard. There's increased suicides, loneliness, depression have all increased as a result because people feel alone. They're connected on one hand, but they're feeling very disconnected on the other. We used to be a much more interdependent society. When we were more agrarian, people were generally farmers. They knew the value of friendships. They knew who lived next door. They knew who they could rely on in times of need. People in the family were off, on the farm. They worked together. They farmed together. They ate meals together. They did a lot of things together, whereas most of our families, it's the way our society is now. Everybody gets up and they all leave and do what they have to do for the day, whether it's school or work or whatever, and then they come back in the evenings. And so it's a much different world in which we live in today. But I remember the couple years I worked on a farm, I appreciated the value of those deep friendships that formed in those communities where, the farmers knew, Farmer Smith down the road and, Farmer whomever the other way. There was one year I remember when I was working on the farm, and a farmer down the road and across the street died unexpectedly. He was young. I don't know what his age was. He had three little kids, none of which were probably even double digits yet. And harvest season had just began. It was time to bring in the crops, and this man unexpectedly died. And I remember being at a meeting when all the farmers in the neighborhood gathered together and came up with a plan to go harvest his crops and take him down to the grain mill for his wife so that she would have income for the year. And these guys were like, okay, I'll work my field, till, 8 p.m., and then I'll drive down there and I'll farm his land till midnight. And other guys were in the morning. It was just amazing to watch them all come together to use their own fuel, their own tractors, their own equipment to bring in his crops because his wife would have had nothing if they didn't. We as a society have many substitutes for physically gathering together. Of course, we have social media, which is almost really anything but actual real social togetherness. It's a substitute of sorts. It creates a false sense of belonging. Facebook even calls them friends. And I've always marveled when you look at your list. I mean, how many of those people would you really call your friends? Acquaintances, maybe. I think I've told you a couple years ago I went through and purged. I was just trying to get off Facebook completely. I just started going through, and it was like, who is this? Like, how did they end up on my... Like, I don't even remember some of these people, how they ended up on there. But they were there nonetheless. But I think the reality of all of that is that this calling them friends only diminishes what a true friend really and truly is. and I want to talk about that today. I want to begin by sharing the lyrics of a song that was the beginning of a popular TV sitcom titled Cheers, which you probably wouldn't realize went off the air 28 years ago. Some people just went, wow, I'm that old? Meaning you, no. Yep, it was a long time ago, went off the air in 93. It's got a catchy little tune. I've always remembered the lyrics. But the tune, and I'm not going to sing. And I know some of you just went, glad to hear that. Here's what the lyrics say. Making your way in the world today takes everything you've got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to get away? Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name, and they're always glad you came. You want to be where you can see. Our troubles are all the same. People, you want to know where people are all the same, and you want to go where everyone knows your name. Now, some of you probably know the sitcom or probably got the tune going in your head right now. It's a catchy little tune and sad in that it was written about a bar when you think about it. It really is a sad thing when you think about it. Charles Swindoll was once quoted as stating this: the neighborhood bar is possibly the best counterfeit that there is to the fellowship Christ wants us to give his church. It's an imitation, dispensing liquor instead of grace, escape rather than reality, but it is a permissive, accepting, and inclusive fellowship. It is unshockable. It is democratic. You can tell people secrets, and they usually don't tell others or even want to. Most of the time, they don't even really care what your secrets are. He goes on, he says, the bar flourishes not because most people are alcoholics, but because God has put into the human heart the desire to know and be known, to love and be loved, and so many seek a counterfeit at the price of a few beers. Join me in Proverbs 17 and verse 17. Note what Solomon wrote. Proverbs 17 and verse 17. The New King James Version renders this passage, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. I never had a brother, but some people think, yeah, my brother's a real pain, right, whatever. But that's not what it really means. The New Living Translation says, and I like the way they translate it, a friend is always loyal, and a brother is born to help in time of need. You know, a true friend is someone whom we enjoy mutual affections and interests and respect for various things. The best of friends are those that are help to us in times of trouble. They're our advocate for us when, we find ourselves in need. They're honest to us when we need correction or they see us going down a certain path. A true friend won't let you go down a path that will lead to your destruction. They are valuable. Again, they provide that correction and training from people that we know love us, that care for us, that we can trust. And so when a friend comes to you and says, I got to talk to you about this, it's a whole lot easier than coming from a complete stranger. Because without our friends, who will be honest with us, we become very, very narrow in our thinking and what we're doing, and we lose sight of the bigger picture of what God is doing. And so I want to ask the question, who is your friend? Now, it's interesting, Mr. Jenkins touched on a couple points I want to make today, and one of them is right over in John 15. Let's go to John 15. He read this in the sermonette. And why is friendship important? Maybe that's the better question we should be asked. Why is friendship important? And I think you'll see that maybe our understanding of what a real friend is has been lost a little bit. Words change meaning over time, right? We have words in our society that you just don't use today like you did maybe 50, 60 years ago, or gay would be one of those. It's got a different meaning today. And even the word friends, I think, has been watered down, if I can use that term, because, again, go look at Facebook and you have this list of friends, but how many of them are that real friend that is that friend you can count on at all times? Let me get over to John 15, since I asked you to go there. That would be helpful. John 15. Here, Jesus is explaining the importance of a relationship with him, comparing us as branches, and he is the vine. John 15, beginning in verse 1. I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away, and every branch that bears fruit, he prunes that it may bear more fruit. And we're going to read all these verses as we come to Passover in a few weeks. We'll be going through many of these and reading them again. You are already clean because of the word which I have spoken to you. Abide in me, verse 4, and I in you, as the branch cannot bear fruit of itself. Unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. He who abides in me, and I in him, bears much fruit, for without me you can do nothing. And so he's explaining all of this, and again, keep in mind the timing. Judas is not present now. Judas has already departed to finish in his betrayal of Jesus Christ. And we drop on down to verse 12, and notice then what he says, and Mr. Jenkins touched on this. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. You are my friends if you do whatever I command you. No longer, verse 15, do I call you servants, for a servant does not know what his master is doing, but I have called you friends. For all things that I heard from my Father I have made known to you. And so I thought as I was reading this this week that it would be good for us to look at the importance of developing and maintaining real friendships, real, true, deep friendships. It seems like such a trivial concept because we've trivialized the word in our society. It's just a word that doesn't have any depth to it, as I believe Jesus Christ intended that word. You know, he waited till Judas was gone before he called them his friends. I think there's a significance there. He was going to be betrayed here, but here he says, you know, now I call you friends. I've titled the sermon simply True Friendship. You know, what is true friendship? What does a real friend look like? How do we become a real friend to someone else? I mean, let's face it, we all need friends, but true, those really true, deep, lasting friendships take a lot of time to develop. Right? I can think of a few people in my life that I would call my closest friends. And I can remember the first time I met them. And I can remember when I met them never thinking, oh, this is going to become my really close friend. You just meet them like you meet everybody else. But then it just takes time. And over time and many experiences and conversations and trials, and pretty soon you begin to realize I'm spending most of my time. I'm stressed, who do I call? That's when you begin to realize it, what it's developed into. Now, in the New Testament, the predominant word for friend is philos or philia. It's often used for friendship. It's a term we're familiar with. In the Old Testament, there are two Hebrew words I can't pronounce them. One denotes an association or a companion. The other implies the object of one's affection or devotion. It's much deeper. It's more intimate, if I can use that term. There's more emotion tied into it. So you could have a friendship that's simply an association. I would call those acquaintances. But then there's others that are closer and more loving and they're deeper, and that's what Christ was referring to his disciples. Now I'm going to call you friends because the relationship had gone to that point. The most well-known example of friendship is in the Old Testament, and it's between David and Jonathan. Join me in 1 Samuel 18. This is probably the most known example that we're familiar with. First Samuel 18, we'll just read a couple of verses here. Notice how their relationship, this friendship is described. In 1 Samuel 18, it says, now when he had finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And he'll use that phrase. We'll come back to this later in the sermon. You'll see that is a phrase that he uses on several occasions. Again, he was loved him as his own soul, or they were knit to the soul of one another. It's that level of friendship that just develops over time and is that closely tied together. Over in chapter 20, 1 Samuel 20 and verse 17, we'll see it again. Now, Jonathan again caused David to vow because he loved him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul. And again, there's many verses that say this throughout this relationship here. We'll come back to it a little bit later in the sermon. But it's interesting to know that friendship because again, it's a word that maybe doesn't have as much depth of meaning as it used to, is not limited only to human relationships. Right? Even though Jesus called his disciples friends while he was on earth, the Old Testament affirms in several occasions that there is a friendship between God, between the divine and the human, if I could use that example. 2 Chronicles is one such location that says that. You could jot down Exodus 33 as well. The Lord spoke to Moses face to face as a man speaks to his friend. But here in 2 Chronicles, we'll see that Abraham is called a friend of God. Second Chronicles 20. Verse 7. Are you not our God who drove out the inhabitants of this land before your people Israel and gave it to the descendants of Abraham, your friend forever? And so clearly we can see that it is possible to have this level of a relationship, a friendship, if you will, between the divine and the human if we're striving to work towards that. We see this in Isaiah 41 as well and several other locations. I just want to hit a couple of them. Isaiah 41, verse 8. Isaiah 41, verse 8 says, "But you, Israel, are my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the descendants of Abraham, my friend." And we see this repeated in Scripture in many locations, that Abraham's called a friend of God. And so it's a level of a relationship that goes far beyond just an acquaintance. It's deeper and more meaningful, and it's not just between two physical human beings. God wants to have that relationship with us as well. Notice Ecclesiastes chapter 4. In Ecclesiastes 4, we'll see several components of what makes for a good friendship, a good relationship of that sorts. We'll just look at a few verses in Ecclesiastes chapter 4 and verse 9. We'll begin there. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, beginning verse 9. Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, one will lift up his companion. But woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him up. Again, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? Though one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. You know, we see several implied thoughts here for us on relationships or friendships. Verse 9 says it's a good investment, right? Two are better than one. They have a good reward for their labor. The word for good reward can be translated a good return or a bountiful return. You know, there's a return on investment, and so are our friendships. All types of investments involve risk. That was one of those phrases I had to memorize when I was a financial advisor. You couldn't talk to anybody without giving them the whole, all investments have risk of loss, that's to the point where I got tired of repeating it. But it was part of what was required. But even friendships have risk, right? To have a good reward, to have a bountiful return in a relationship involves risk. You may be risking being vulnerable. How many of you could think of in your own life as a friendship was developing, there were little things that you wanted to say, but you weren't sure to say, so you would kind of say something else to see, like, what happened? Or did it get repeated? Could they keep it confidential? You know, and it's kind of a little test to see, you know, because you're going to be vulnerable. And that's the risk to have a really deep, meaningful, true relationship or friendship with somebody involves that risk of being vulnerable and opening yourself up. And so it's an important aspect of our relationships. And likewise, you may find in that working towards that level of a friendship, you may find yourself, you know, maybe you're getting more out of the relationship than you feel you're putting in. Or maybe you feel you're putting in more than you're getting in return. And it's all part of developing this relationship. But regardless of all of that, the very best investments we'll ever make in life are people, not things. Right? You could do well financially with investing, but you can't take it with you. Right? The best investments we make are friendships, relationships. I recounted this morning, and I think I shared with you, I went to a funeral of a friend in Michigan a few months back, a lovely young lady with a great, just vibrant personality and a heart as big as all outdoors. And to listen to the different tributes that people made about her life was almost tear-jerking, because she just, everybody talked about all that she did and giving of herself for everybody else. And, you know, here, you know, you just listen to one story after another, and this pattern emerges of this individual who truly valued people. You could say something to them one time and they would remember it, and they would, you know, do things because that's how much they looked towards other people and serving them. So at the end of our lives, we can't take our physical things with us, but our legacy, because that was something that was important to her, she talked often about, what's my legacy going to be? It was almost sad, because in many ways, she didn't think she was accomplishing much in life, but yet everybody that talked about her just, I mean, I don't think she appreciated the impact she had on so many people. Right? So what is our legacy going to be, right? Are we going to invest in relationships and people and time, or is it just going to be physical things that we can't take with us? God wants us to master relationships. He doesn't care if you're worth a nickel or $5 million. What he cares about is, can we master the art of relationships? Because relationships is what it's all about. Notice, if you will, in Matthew 22, remember the Pharisee that tried testing Jesus with a question, which is the greatest of the commandments? And notice how Jesus responds, Matthew 22, beginning verse 37. Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment." So the first one is to love the Lord your God. Relationship. Right? We heard this talked about in the sermonette as well. If you love me, keep my commandments. But it's all about a relationship. So that's the first one. This is the first and great commandment. Verse 39. And the second is like it. "You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." It's a relationship with God and a relationship with people. That's what it boils down to. God doesn't care about how much money we have or don't have. I mean, those are all wonderful blessings when we have them. What he cares about is, are we working at developing meaningful relationships? First and foremost with him. And I'm a firm believer that if we're doing that part, the other part kind of takes care of itself. It becomes this natural byproduct of having a relationship with God and the fruit of the Holy Spirit working through you, that kind of will take care of itself if we're doing the first part. And so God wants us to master this art of relationships. Next, back in Ecclesiastes 4, if we want to go back there again, we'll see that real friends help you when you're down. We see that mentioned there. Ecclesiastes 4, verse 10. "For if they fall, one will lift up his companion, but woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him up again. Again, if two lie down together, they will keep warm, but how can one be warm alone?" So we see this principle of being there for each other when one is down and they need help. They also provide that emotional support if necessary. We see that as well. I'm sure in your life you've probably been disappointed by a friend from time to time. You know, those individuals that you thought you could count on, people that you thought were your friends. But then, you know, something happens and it's 2 a.m. and you make a phone call and they're too busy or whatever it is. Those things can be a shock to us. But, you know, a real friend, the type that we're speaking of here, is that person that when you call them and 2 in the morning and tell them you're in a bind are probably getting dressed at the same time they're asking, where are you and I can come help you out. That's the kind of friendships that we certainly want to be and certainly hope that we have in our lives. There's an interesting perspective in this verse when it's translated into the Aramaic. If it's translated into Aramaic, it says, if one of them falls upon the bed and lies sick, the other will cause his friend to rise by his prayer. You know, to even be, it's a term that we don't use a lot in our church cultures, the prayer warrior type thing, but it is, that individual who will, is that deeply invested in a friend that at the very least will be praying consistently for that person and doing what they can to help them. This is a person who, when you're facing that battle of, how am I going to get through, fill in the blank, they're the ones that are going to help you through it, whatever it takes. So hopefully we have a friend like that in our life, and hopefully we're trying to be that friend to others. John Gill's commentary adds this on this section of Ecclesiastes 4. It says, his friend and brother in a religious community will visit him, sympathize with him, speak a word of comfort to him, and pray with him, which may issue in his restoration. Or if he falls into outward distress, poverty, and want, his spiritual friend or friends will distribute to his necessity. If he falls into errors, as a good many may, such are some of the same religious society with him will take some pains to convince him of the error of his way. That friend that says, you don't want to do that. I'm here as your friend. Once in my life, I had to tell a good friend not to marry somebody. It was the hardest thing I ever had to do. But I couldn't not say it. I felt it had to be said, and I had to explain why and what I knew. But that's what a friend will do, right? To convince him of the error of the way, to convert him from it, and to save a soul from death and cover a multitude of sins. We've talked about that topic as well, right? You're not covering up a sin. But if you know of a brother's sin, you go to your brother alone, privately, so that it gives him a chance to correct it privately and not publicly. That's what friends do. And if he falls into sin to which the best of men are liable, such as our spiritual, will endeavor to restore him in a spirit of meekness. How many people like that do you have in your life that you would then attach the label friend? You see, I think our view of friends is much different today than what Jesus hoped it would be. He viewed friends at a very high plane. And so that's why I use the term, true friends, real friends, deep friendships. Because I think the word friend alone is incomplete. Also, we see here in Ecclesiastes 4, verse 12, that a real friend is someone that will fight to protect you and your reputation. They will, withstand people on your behalf. They're there to protect you. There's a phrase, they've got your back. That phrase comes out of ancient warfare. Prior to the days of modern warfare, most wars were fought hand-to-hand combat. And when they went into hand-to-hand combat, they went in as a pair. And they stood back to back. Because, you can only fight in this direction when it's hand-to-hand and your back is exposed. So two soldiers would go in back to back. They literally had their back, right? You worry about this, I'll worry about that, I got your back. And along with that came the phrase that we're familiar with, that they won't stab you in the back. Because you also had the trust that that person's not going to turn on you and stab you in the back. And so these modern terms that we have come from that very real world of people that would go into battle. If you think you had to do that, wouldn't you really want to know that person? Like, if you're going to trust them with your life, that they've got your back and won't stab you in the back. It's that level of a relationship that we should be striving to achieve. And so we see here in Ecclesiastes 4 several elements of true, real, deep friendship. It's a good investment, right? It takes time. You got to give of yourself. You got to be vulnerable. But it has a bountiful reward, as it says. They'll help you when you're down. They provide emotional, physical support. And that real friend is going to, they got your back. They're going to be there for you. They're going to protect you. They're going to protect your reputation. They will stand up for you. Because that's what friends do, as opposed to, turning their back. So let's go back then and look at one of the best examples of true friendship in 1 Samuel 8. We're not going to read all of the story of the relationship between David and Jonathan. It is a familiar story, but I just want to hit a few of the highlights, because it does show that it is possible to have these types of relationships in our lives. We are entering into David's life here at 1 Samuel 18 after he slew Goliath. And we'll see this friendship between David and Jonathan, who's the firstborn son of the first king of Israel, Saul. 1 Samuel 18, verse 1. Now, when he had finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. Saul took him that day and would not let him go home to his father's house anymore. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant, because he loved him as his own soul. There's that terminology used again. And Jonathan took off the robe that was on him and gave it to David with his armor, even to his sword and his bow and his belt. And so David went out wherever Saul sent him and behaved wisely. So here we see in the beginning here this relationship. We see that these friends love one another as themselves. That's what it says in verse 1. It said he loved him as his own soul. A true friend is that person that's going to treat you in the same way that you would want to be treated. They're going to treat them how they would treat themselves. And likewise, we should have that thought as we think of our friendships with others. You know, how good of a friend are we if we're only thinking about ourselves and what we're getting out of the relationship? You know, a true friend is thinking about, what can I put into this relationship? What can I put into this friendship to strengthen it and make it stronger? The next principle we see is in verse 3, where friends are committed to each other. In verse 3, it says, Jonathan and David made a covenant. We see that phrase, he loved him as himself, repeated again. You know, it's interesting in this relationship, one of the things that I mentioned this morning that's kind of extraordinary about the relationship is that Jonathan's royalty, right? He's the son of the king. He can do whatever he wants. He doesn't need to necessarily become friends with David for anything. He could just do whatever he wants. But so we see then, that's, I think, what makes this very extraordinary. He doesn't have to be committed to David from a very physical, selfish sense for anything. But yet he does, and he has this relationship, and we see here in verse 3 that they are so committed that they make a covenant. Again, covenants are not a term we use today, but you know, it's that friend that is not a fair-weather friend. They're going to be there for you through thick and thin, through difficult times, and they'll be there even when others have abandoned you. It's that level of a friendship. Remember back in Ecclesiastes 4, we won't go there, talked about if they fall, one will lift up his companion, but woe to the one who is alone when he falls. You know, a true friend is committed to helping one another when they're down. It could be simply emotional support. Sometimes it's just letting somebody talk on the phone for, I won't say a time, because then you'll say, well, that's my 45. It could be hours, and you just listen and don't try to fix anything. Sometimes they just need to talk. This is one of the things I've learned since coming into the ministry was, you know, because my nature is a fix-it person. You know, somebody starts talking to me, and I want to start putting forward answers right away. And I have found that sometimes one of the best things you can do is just let people talk. Don't say anything. Just let them talk. And sometimes that's all people need, is somebody to talk to. And so you could be that friend who's willing to give that emotional support. Maybe it is some physical or financial support in times to help them through something difficult. But here it says, you know, they made a covenant in verse 3. It just shows that they were committed. You know, I got your back. If you need me, call me. I don't care what time it is. So how committed are you to your true friends, your close friends? Would you do anything, I always add, legal and appropriate, anything for your friend? You know, do you have a line that you won't cross? Or is it, nope, they're my friend. And if it's legal and it's appropriate and it's right with God, I'll be there for my friend. In 1 Samuel 19, let's go over a chapter. While we're here, over in chapter 20, verse 4, notice what Jonathan said to David, whatever you yourself desire, I'll do it for you. It falls into that principle we just looked at, right? Would you do anything legal and appropriate and right for your friend? But here we see in chapter 19, verses 1 and 2, how friends look out for one another. It says, now Saul spoke to Jonathan, his son, to all his servants, that they should kill David. But Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted greatly in David. So Jonathan told David, saying, my father Saul seeks to kill you. Therefore, please be on your guard until morning and stay in a secret place and hide. Again, he's got his back. You know, again, that's what makes it so extraordinary. Jonathan didn't have to do anything. In fact, if Jonathan was getting wind of the reality that David could be a successor in his place, wouldn't human nature and most people say, well, let him take him out. It only serves, you know, it makes it better for me. How much do we look out for the interests of others over ourselves? Do we care about the problems they're facing? Are we willing to speak up when you see a problem? That's a whole other challenge right there. If something's not right, would you speak up? You know, in our youth, and I can include myself in this, when we're young, we may have had occasions in our lives when a friend is being picked on in school. In fact, I've got examples of that even in church. But maybe it's school, maybe it's just a league that you're on for some sporting event or whatever. The coach is picking on them. But you have a friend that's being picked on, maybe where it's in the neighborhood, and you know that if you speak up, you're probably going to get picked on too. And so you take the easy way out and you say nothing. Or even worse, you try to pretend like you didn't see it, because then you can claim that you didn't see it, and that's why you didn't do anything. I'm sure I'm not the only one that's been faced with that in life. A true friend wouldn't do this. I know on the occasion it just came to my mind as I was speaking about in church, it happened when we were teenagers and the basketball team we were playing on, we had a coach that was just a bully, and he was bullying my best friend. Every year he picked on somebody. Just everybody knew this. Every year somebody became his person he picked on through the year. And I finally had enough of it, and I told him I had enough of it, and I went and had a conversation with our pastor about it. And I didn't care what anybody thought. It was just wrong. At first I didn't, but after it happened a couple of times, I realized I'm not going to sit here and let this happen. Sometimes in our youth, it's simply immaturity. We just don't know how to handle those things. We're kids, right? It happens, right? And so as we grow and mature, hopefully we get better at realizing there's times when we should speak up. But it doesn't always happen because there are adults that still behave that way. It may happen at work when maybe your best friend is, there's some injustice is happening at work and no one's going to be willing to speak up because, you know, I might be the next one picked on or ostracized or passed over for a promotion or maybe even fired or whatever, so people just put their head down and do nothing. So it's not unique to children. I think children, I think we give them a pass because it's just immaturity. They got to grow and mature, so we understand that. But, you know, this happened in Jesus Christ's time as well. Notice Matthew 26. You know, Peter was warned that he would deny Christ. And we looked at this a couple weeks ago. Of course, Peter denied that he was going to deny Christ, right? So he's like, oh, no, I'm not going to do that. And in Matthew 26, just as Jesus said he would, we see what happened. And here, Peter, who was just called my friend, right? I no longer call you servants. I call you friends or the disciples. Peter comes along, and here at this time we see Matthew 26, verse 69. Now Peter sat outside in the courtyard, and a servant girl came to him saying, you also were with Jesus of Galilee. But he denied it before them all, saying, I do not know what you are saying. And when he had gone out to the gateway, another girl saw him and said to those who were there, this fellow also was with Jesus of Nazareth. But again he denied it with an oath, I do not know the man. And a little later, those who stood by came up and said to Peter, "Surely you also are one of them, for your speech betrays you." Verse 74, then he began to curse and swear, saying, "I do not know the man." And immediately a rooster crowed. Peter denied his friend. Jesus said, "I call you my friend." And he denied him. And so adults can still do it. It can still happen. We know what happened right after that in the end of verse 75. You remember the word of Jesus who said to him, "Before the rooster crows, you'll deny me three times." He went out and he wept bitterly. That is a reaction of a close friend. When you realize I'll use the word betrayed. Maybe that's too strong of a word. Denied is certainly the word that's used in Scripture. Didn't take action when maybe you could have taken action. And he realized it. He wept bitterly. Another quality we see is that friends do rejoice when their friends have successes. 1 Samuel 19, we won't go there, but yeah, let's go there. Let's go back to the story. 1 Samuel 19, real quickly. Yeah, we're doing fine. 1 Samuel 19. Verses 4 and 5. Thus Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul his father and said to him, "Let not the king sin against his servant, against David, because he has not sinned against you, and because his works have been very good towards you. For he took his life in his hands and killed the Philistine, and the Lord brought out a great deliverance for all Israel. You saw it and rejoiced. Why then will you sin against innocent blood to kill David without a curse?" And so we realize that as friends, a true friend will rejoice with you when it's time to rejoice, right? Maybe you get a promotion. Rather than being maybe bitter about it or jealous, we just rejoice with them. They got a promotion. That's a good thing. That's what a true friend will do. In the Apostle Paul's letter to the church of Rome, he tells us to rejoice with those who rejoice. Romans chapter 12 and verse 15 tells us that. So a true friend is not going to be jealous or angry or concerned when we get a promotion or something good happens. They're going to rejoice with us. And likewise, if we turn that back around, we should be willing to do that to others as well. So now for a short warning, Mr. Jenkins, mentioned the example I gave a few weeks ago. Friendships have dangers, right? Some friendships have dangers. For quote-unquote friends can sometimes give us bad advice. And so that's why you still, again, have to be careful. They can give us bad advice. They can double-cross us. Sometimes they can hurt us when they pull away from us when we think we need them the most. And maybe in the most egregious case, I'll use the term friend in quotes, might try to lead us away from God's way of life. I would imagine if we went around the room, many of you have such a friend that at one point, maybe 10 years ago, maybe 25 years ago, tried to lead you off the path. I had friends like that. Some to the point where they became so bitter and obnoxious that I couldn't even have a conversation on social media. You and I are writing back and forth about something and they decide they're going to jump in. And they're going to just spew their vile hatred of anything we would be discussing because their attitude is, "Hey, it's a public platform. I can do it. It's not private messaging." I'm like, "Okay, but you didn't have to." So to the point where it's just like, okay, delete them, block them, and just move on with my life. But we need to be careful because we always need to be careful of making our own decisions in life, and we can't always follow what our friends are doing. And we have to know when to make that choice. Deuteronomy 13. Deuteronomy chapter 13. And as I said, many of you have had to make that choice already in life because as they went down a different path, as hard as it was, as difficult and painful as it was, you chose not to go down that path. Deuteronomy chapter 13 and verse 6. We'll look at a couple of verses here. If your brother, the son of your mother, your son or your daughter, the wife of your bosom, or your friend who is as your own soul. That's the same terminology that Jonathan and David used, as your own soul, a very close, real friend. Secretly entices you, saying, let us go and serve other gods which you have not known, neither you nor your fathers, of the gods of the people which are all around you, near to you or far off from you, from one end of the earth to the other end of the earth. You shall not consent to him or listen to him, nor shall your eye pity him, nor shall you spare him or conceal him. You know, I sure hope and pray as time goes on we don't have those things again, because those are the real painful parts of, you know, things like that, is when you're close friends and you have to part ways over some matters. But we all have to choose our friends carefully. We can't let our guard down. We can't follow a friend just because they are a friend. As I mentioned a couple weeks ago, Mr. Jenkins mentioned, I had friends that I thought were my friends until I realized we're actually so much more different than I realized. And I had the presence of mind to get out of those relationships. Proverbs features many references to friendships in the Bible. Notice Proverbs 19. The interesting thing is, when you look at most of the advice given in the book of Proverbs about friendships, many of them are cautions against the dangers of unhealthy friendships. Friendships that are shallow and disingenuous, that may lead to your own destruction. Proverbs 19, verse 6. Notice this one. Proverbs 19, 6. Many entreat the favor of the nobility, and every man is a friend to one who gives gifts. So here's one of those. It's bribery in essence. Oh, yeah, everybody's a friend to a man who gives gifts. So this is one of those examples where Proverbs speaks of friends, but it's basically speaking of some of the dangers of unhealthy friendships. Notice what James wrote in James chapter 4. James 4 and verse 4. James chapter 4, beginning of verse, we'll just look at verse 4, just one verse. Adulterers and adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Whoever therefore wants to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. You know, we need to be very careful of who are our friends. Who are we spending most of our time with? Who are we developing those deep, meaningful relationships with? One final verse back in Proverbs again, Proverbs 18, 24. This is another one of those that would fall into those category that we list as memory scriptures. Proverbs 18, 24. Because the key admonition here in Proverbs 18, 24 is to be proactive. It says, a man who has friends must himself be friendly. But there is a friend that sticks closer than a brother. True friendship, real, deep, meaningful relationships ought to be mutual. They should be reciprocal. We should be striving to be friendly, right, in order to have friends. It might be better said that a man who wants to have friends must first be friendly. You know, we should be striving to be friendly. I've mentioned before, you know, we have a unique situation here, having a building that we'll probably just have people showing up. And we do a good job, and need to always remember to always be friendly. Just be friendly and inviting, and it's a key aspect of, again, who we want to be and who we want to be known as. At the beginning of the sermon, I mentioned again that we're living in a time when most people think we're connected, but it's not the type of connections with real meaning. We have many substitutes for physical togetherness. We've got texting and cell phones and social media, and of course video chatting now, and video Zoom and all that is taken off as well. In some sense, it creates a false sense of belonging, a false sense of belonging. We know most of this is temporary, right? I'm hopeful. I'm praying. I know we all wonder in the church if our attendance will ever get back to what it was, if people are just going to be content to never come back. I don't know. We'll see. Time will tell. I hope and pray this is temporary, that everybody that's unable to be here will yearn to be back when they feel comfortable. Because that's the only way we're really going to develop the deep, meaningful relationship that God wants us to have. Remember, Jesus said, greater love has no one than this, and to lay down his life for his friends was the term he used. And he said, you are my friends if you do what I command you. So I said in the beginning, who is your friend? Is Jesus your friend? Or let me rephrase that. Am I his friend? Because he said, if I do what I command you, I'm his friend. So the onus and the responsibility is on me. Am I his friend? Am I doing what I need to do in my life to be his friend? I'm going to go back to that song intro that I shared with you from that show Cheers, because I remember even years ago thinking about the irony of those lyrics and how much it should actually apply to a church and not a bar. It says, making your way in the world today takes everything you've got, because we're not of this world. That's why it takes everything we got, because we're not of this world. And John 17, 14 tells us that. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. God gave us the Sabbath to do exactly that. Take a break from all that. Every 7 days he gives this to us. Wouldn't you like to get away? And sometimes you want to go where everyone knows your name and they're always glad you came. That should be us. We know your name and we're glad you came. Right? And so I said, every time I hear this, I keep thinking that should be about us. You want to be where you can see our troubles are all the same. Ecclesiastes, there's nothing new under the sun. We all have trials. We all have challenges. They may be different, but we all have them. That's why we're all the same. We're all dealing with our own challenges. But you want to go where people know your name. That's what we want to be, that people where we know each other's name. It just occurred to me, I think I told you the story once where, and again, I got all the excuses ready to go for this. So I was at the Feast of Tabernacles. That was back in the day when our congregations were bigger, excuse number one, right? And it was at the feast, and there was like the Dells, 10,000 people there, 9,000, whatever it was. And I met somebody, and they said, oh, you probably know so-and-so. They go to your congregation. I'm like, no, they don't. We have four congregations in Detroit, so maybe they go to one of the other ones. They're like, no, I'm pretty sure they said the same congregation. I'm like, yeah, I don't know that name. And I got home from the feast, and they were in my congregation, and I didn't know their name. I've never forgot that. What a horrible feeling. Now, again, I could say, oh, yeah, well, back then we had 400 people in our congregation. That's just an excuse. When I'm honest with myself, it's an excuse, right? So if there's one good thing that God has done with us being smaller is we're intimate. We should know each other's names. We should know our interest and be closer in that regard. The two great commandments are about true and meaningful relationships, first with God and then with man and with each other, because Jesus called us friends.